It was the night of Tuesday, December 9th, 1975, and the weather was windy and overcast in the small market town of Llanrwst, North Wales. Hugh Watson put on his overcoat, hobbled out of the bar at the Penybryn Hotel, and set off for home. The 77-year-old had spent the previous couple of hours enjoying a pint and a game of dominoes, but he was now feeling tired. He lived only 600 metres away from his drinking hole, but Hugh suffered terribly from arthritis and needed the assistance of two walking sticks in order to put one foot in front of the other. He struggled to lift his foot above the height of a brick. The walk typically took Hugh 30 to 45 minutes to complete, and it was around 9:30 p.m. when he left the licensed establishment on Acaster Square, in the town centre. Hugh was a well-known figure around the town, and several local people witnessed him shuffling along his route home that night. Hugh was originally from Llanfiangol Glymorfa, a village a half-hour drive to the southeast, but had lived in Llanrwst for several years. He had long since retired, but had previously worked as a roadman and farm worker in the Carrigadrudion district, near his place of birth. His main task was operating and driving machinery, like steamrollers and threshing machines. For some considerable time, Hugh had been living in a makeshift dwelling, in a cowshed or stable, situated at Plaza Avon Farm. The property was on Station Road, behind the Queen's Hotel, and just metres from the railway line and the platform at Llanrwst. The property was owned by local farmer George Jones of Bron Gurdy Farm. From later police reports, it is evident that the dwelling was filthy and unfit for human habitation. It was an extremely sparse existence. There was a gas canister inside the cowshed with which Hugh could cook some basic food, but other than that, he had few possessions. As part of his arrangement with the farmer, he would take care of the sheepdog and a brood of chickens and some other poultry. Hugh was due to move into what was referred to at the time as an old people's home later that week, though as it turned out, he was never afforded the opportunity to do this. Hugh took his time walking back home that evening and arrived at the cowshed at 10:10. He unlocked the padlock on the door and entered the property, hung his walking sticks in their usual place, and settled down for the night. At 11:35 p.m, two police officers were out patrolling the town on foot when they caught sight of smoke silhouetted against the night sky. On closer inspection, they could see the smoke billowing from a hay barn which stood adjacent to the cowshed where Hugh Watson lived. The officers got to a phone and alerted the fire service. The local crew from Llanrwst responded, and a brigade from Bettercycoid, a town 10 minutes' drive south along the A470, also attended the scene. Within minutes, firefighters had arrived and were tackling the blaze. The flames were doused very quickly, and it was only then that the seriousness of the situation became apparent. On top of a pile of blackened hay bales, a firefighter discovered the partially charred body of Hugh Watson. It was very clear that foul play was afoot, as numerous bloody wounds caused by a sharp object were visible on the head and neck of the body. Persons Unknown is a true crime podcast dedicated to unsolved murders and missing persons cases from all over the world. I'm John, I live in Wales, UK, and I research, write and produce this podcast. New episodes are released every other Monday. If you'd like to become a supporter of the podcast, please see the link in the show notes. For as little as the price of a cup of coffee a month, you can help to ensure these historical and lesser-known cases from around the world are aired and gain exposure. The show notes are also where to find social media details, information about the sources used for each case, and transcripts for all the episodes. If you enjoy the podcast, please consider leaving a review on your app. They make a real difference, and I love reading them. Finally, you can help others hear about Persons Unknown by sharing and recommending on social media. Thank you so much for listening. Now back to this week's episode. Immediately, 40 detectives from across North Wales made their way to Llanrwst. Huge floodlights were brought in to conduct an inch-by-inch search of the barn. The barn stood on a quiet, residential part of Station Road, and the commotion woke the neighbours, who despite the cold and late hour, all came out onto the street to observe what was going on. Home Office pathologist Donald Waite arrived at the scene and carried out a cursory examination. A full post-mortem took place just hours later at Carnarvon and Anglesey Hospital in Bangor. Just as a note, I've read one report that says the post-mortem was carried out at the scene of the crime. The full details of the post-mortem were not made known at the time, and I will come back to them later. Suffice to say, the police did disclose that Hugh had been attacked in the stable, where he had been stabbed multiple times with a pitchfork or similar sharp object. He had then been dragged alive to the adjoining Dutch barn, which contained 800 bales of hay. Hugh was thrown onto some of the bales and set alight while still alive. Cause of death was given as asphyxia due to smoke inhalation. A truly horrifying death, displaying such cruelty and malice towards a defenceless, older man. The murder shocked the residents of Llanrwst, and rumours began to circulate as to why Hugh Watson had been targeted. There had been whispers for years that Hugh Watson's frugal and simple life was a smokescreen for the fact that he was actually reasonably wealthy. The local legend was that he kept a significant amount of cash in the cowshed, which he had saved up over a long and hard-working life. The belief among locals was that someone had heard of this nest egg and had chosen to rob the elderly man, believing him to be an easy target. Whether the culprit had set out to kill Hugh was up for debate, but it was clear the guilty party had a strong stomach for violence. This theory found credence when the police announced in the press, for example the Daily Post, Merseyside edition, on December 13, 1975, that the charred remains of banknotes had been found at the scene. Detective Chief Superintendent, DCS, Eric Evans, made an appeal for a relative of the culprit to come forward. Whoever the killer was would have likely returned home that night with hay and blood on their clothing. It was also pointed out that the killer may have undergone changes in their demeanour or behaviour. A special hotline was set up at Llanrwst Police Station, where an incident room was also established. Shortly after this, a description of a man the police were looking to locate was made public. This particular individual had been seen at 9:50 p.m. on the night in question at Llandudno train station. Llandudno is a town a half-hour drive to the north of Llanrwst, and again just before 11 p.m. in Station Road, Llanrwst, near the location of the barn. The man was between 20 and 30 years old, 5 feet 8 or 172 centimetres tall, with a medium build, He had dark hair and a short cut, full beard. He was said to be wearing a dark overcoat and trousers. This man is seldom mentioned in later reports, and it is unclear if he was ever traced. The population of Llanrwst was 2,820, and over the next week, every home there was visited by police officers, who asked a slew of questions. Inquiries then began to move to surrounding areas, like the village of Trefeu, which lay a 20-minute walk along Gower's Road. In total, around 2,000 homes were visited, and if people were out, police officers returned at a later date. A week after the murder, roadblocks were established and motorists were asked for their whereabouts on the night of the murder. Inquiries were also made with the Criminal Records Office in London to see if any escapees from prison or borstals could possibly have been in the area at the time. One presumes the brutality displayed in the murder made investigators suspect they could be looking for someone with a violent criminal history. Hugh Watson's funeral took place on January 12, 1976, at Caersalem Chapel in his home village of Llanfihangel in Morfa. It was attended by over 100 mourners, including an unnamed senior detective. Presumably, the latter was present not only to pay their respects, but also to make note of any persons acting suspiciously. Reverend Idwell Jones led the service and paid tribute to Hugh, saying he had a likeable personality. Due to Hugh working for many years in the local farming community, the Reverend added that he was a well-known figure and would be sorely missed. Hugh Watson was a bachelor, and it was said he had no close family members. However, his brothers James and Caradog were present, and the funeral flowers were provided by Hugh's extended family. Hugh's body was laid to rest in the village of Carrig y Drudion. A couple of weeks later, an inquest into his death was opened by Eryri District Coroner J. Pritchard. It was immediately adjourned until more information regarding the death came to light. In early February 1976, North Wales Police decided to release some information about the crime scene which they had been holding back. Detective Chief Superintendent Ernie Watkins told the press that Hugh had suffered 22 stab wounds. I've also read the slightly lower total of 18. One of the wounds was just below the right ear and was 6 centimetres deep. This injury bled profusely. Each wound was 0.5 centimetre in diameter, and they had been made with significant force. Many had penetrated several layers of thick clothing. These injuries alone would not have caused death, and it seemed they had been inflicted in order to cause pain. It was suggested that Hugh may have been deliberately tortured. Original reports that circulated shortly after the murder suggested the weapon used was something like a pitchfork. Indeed, several pitchforks were found in the barn and tested to see if they had been used as the murder weapon. While this theory had not been completely discounted, pathologist Donald Waite thought it more likely the wounds had been caused by a Phillips screwdriver, sometimes called a crosshead screwdriver. 2 large pools of blood were found in the cowshed, confirming this was where the attack had taken place. After being stabbed, Hugh, who weighed somewhere between 154 and 168 pounds, or 69 to 76 kilograms, I believe it was nearer the upper end of this range, was dragged to the adjoining barn. He was then lifted 5 feet, or 152 centimetres, onto a stack of hay bales. This would have been no mean feat for one person, and would have required a lot of strength. However, for two people, it would have been relatively easy. This led to the idea that more than one person was involved in the murder, a theory that is still widely held. Once laying on top of the bales, he was then covered in hay. The Daily Post later reported, on February 26, 1976, that a gas canister of liquefied petroleum was also placed nearby. I'm guessing this was the one Hugh kept in the cowshed to cook with. It was speculated that it was placed nearby in the hope it would accelerate the fire, possibly causing an explosion and destroying evidence. Hugh succumbed to the smoke fumes due to stab wounds to his chest, having pierced his lungs. Many years later, in 1988, during an interview with the North Wales Weekly, DCS Eric Evans, who by then had become North Wales Police Deputy Chief Constable, mentioned that there was little forensic evidence in the case. Apparently, the fire destroyed a lot of evidence, and Hugh's clothes had been badly damaged by the flames. While the crime scene technicians searched for fibres, none were found. The job of searching for fingerprints was made difficult by the ghastly state of the property. As far as I'm aware, no fingerprints were able to be taken from inside the cowshed, and none were found on the outside of the door. In February 1976, details were also given about two men police were attempting to trace in connection with the case. The pair had caught the 7:30 a.m. train on December 10th from Llanrhys to Llandudno. This was just 8 hours or so after the murder, and Llanrhys train station was less than 100 metres from the barn. The men were seen crossing the railway line in front of the train and boarded the first carriage, taking their seats towards the front, just behind the driver. One of the men was wearing a bobble hat. Four local people on the train, some of whom travelled regularly at that time of day, reported seeing the men. The witnesses said they did not recognise the two men. They were strangers. British Rail were asked to check if the tickets issued to the pair had been handed back in at another station, in the hopes a ticket inspector had remembered seeing the men. There was no such luck, and nothing came of this. The incident room at Llanrhys Police Station had been chock-a-block since the day of the murder. The information about the two men on the train had come to prominence after activity had quieted down somewhat. It was during this respite that detectives were able to start going through the almost 900 statements and deciding which tips to prioritise. The motive for the murder still eluded investigators. The theory that robbery had been the ultimate goal took a back seat after it was revealed that Hugh's wallet was found amongst the burnt debris in the cowshed. Inside the wallet was a total of £18, three £5 notes and three £1 notes. This would be the equivalent of about £180 today. The wallet was found some way from the body, so it appeared it had been deliberately left by the killer or killers. Why would this not insignificant amount of money have been left, if robbery was indeed the motive? Police also now doubted the rumours that Hugh had hoarded a vast amount of cash at the cowshed. It did not appear to crime scene investigators that the barn had been ransacked or searched, and they found no evidence to back up the local stories. Of course, it could be that the killer or killers had arrived expecting to find a stash of money, and rather than wasting time searching the shed, they moved straight to torture to get what they wanted. When this failed to produce results, they panicked, hastily moved Hugh to the barn, set him alight and fled, hoping the fire would destroy any evidence of the crime. 30 additional officers were called in to assist the investigation, to try to force a breakthrough. Some came directly from working on a murder case in the nearby town of Flint. It was believed these officers may bring the experience needed to flesh out those responsible. By releasing the gruesome details of the crime scene, it was hoped would increase the public demand for the murder to be solved and bring forward more clues. The decision was taken to re-question all residents of Flamroost and the wider Carnwy Valley area. The police publicly apologised for the inconvenience and praised locals for their cooperation in the matter. The police then released information about yet another avenue they were attempting to explore. Investigators were trying to trace and identify three young people seen in Llanrwst on the day of the murder. The trio, which consisted of two men and a woman, were seen around lunchtime on Tuesday, December 9th, at the Llanrwst British Legion Club. They were heard speaking Welsh, but they were not thought to be locals. One of the group had on him a British Legion membership card from another club. Despite the best efforts of investigators, the three young people had yet to be traced. The woman was said to be in her mid-twenties and stood 5'4" to 5'6", or 162 to 167 centimetres, with a slim build. She had dark, shoulder-length hair and was possibly wearing a pair of glasses. She had on a long suede coat. One of the men looked in his early 20s and was 5'10" to 6'2", or 178 to 188 centimetres, with a heavy build. He was wearing a grey suit. The other man was shorter, 5'6" to 5'10", or 167 to 178 centimetres, and appeared in his late 20s. He was wearing dark clothing. By the end of February, 5,000 statements had been taken, but as an article in the Daily Post from the 26th of that month illustrates, the police were finding clues extremely hard to come by. Hugh had been killed on a Tuesday, which was the weekly market day in Llanrwst. As a result, there were a lot of people in the town that day who did not live locally. Detectives were getting increasingly frustrated. As well as the three young people I've just mentioned, police had still not been able to track down the two men seen on the Llanrwst to Llandudno train early on the morning of December 10th. This is something that perplexed officers, as so few strangers travelled that train line. All these people may well have been innocent of wrongdoing, but they needed to be found so they could be cleared. Along with these groups of people, there was an additional sighting that police had failed to get to the bottom of. At 11:25 p.m. on said night, two men were seen swiftly crossing the road near the junction of Station Road and the A470, Llanrwst to Glanconwy Road. Around this same time, a woman, passing in her car, told police she had been forced to carry out an emergency stop to prevent her hitting a man who was running across into Parry Road. This was just 50 metres from where the other two men were spotted. Since the North Wales Police had formed in 1950, with the merging of the smaller district forces, the new constabulary had a 100% record of solving murders. Indeed, the only unsolved murder across the whole of North Wales over the previous 30 years was that of Caroline Evans in Coedpoeth in 1945, a case I have previously covered on this podcast. Despite 70 police officers working the Hugh Watson case and interviewing 6,700 people, no arrests were made, and when the inquest finally reconvened in September 1976, Coroner J. Pritchard Jones had no option but to find that Hugh had been murdered by person or persons unknown. Detectives were adamant that inquiries would continue. When the first anniversary of the murder was approaching, a police van was set up in Acaster Square near the Penabrin pub to try and jog people's memories. Acting DCS David Jones told the Daily Post on December 15th, 1976, that the majority of people had forgotten about the murder. It's hard to believe, but life in the small market town had continued, and according to the aforementioned article, Hugh, while a recognisable figure, was on the periphery of the community and was not well known by many people. The article also states that Hugh had not lived in Llanrhys very long, which is at odds with earlier press reports. 18 months after the murder, in the summer of 1977, the peace of the small market town was shattered once again by an act of extreme violence. Yet again, this incident took place on a Tuesday, market day. Late in the afternoon, one of the market traders, a 25-year-old woman named Edith from Stockport, England, was viciously attacked as she was packing up her bedding stall. The stall was set up in Acaster Square, and as Edith went to the nearby car park to fetch her van, she was sat upon in a public toilet and her face was slashed. Two men were witnessed running from the scene. Edith, who went by the name of Dal, was a popular figure amongst fellow traders and customers and had been coming to the market at Llanrhys for some years. She was known to wear a cash pouch around her neck on a strap, but had not been robbed. Police could not fathom the motive, as Edith had also not been sexually assaulted. The senselessness and brutality of the attack brought to the fore the murder of Hugh Watson. Llanrhys was not a violent town, and to have two such incidents occur was alarming. Any notion that this attack was connected to the murder of Hugh Watson was discounted when several arrests were made in this case. It turned out that a former boyfriend of Edith paid two violent criminals to frighten her. They ended up scarring her face for life. As horrifying as this attack was, it had nothing to do with Hugh's murder. North Wales Police Chief of CID DCS Eric Evans was determined that the hunt for Hugh's killer or killers would go on. Leads had taken them to the Wirral, an area in northwest England near the city of Liverpool. This location is an hour and 15 minutes drive from Llanrhys. A few months later, in February 1978, following a slurry of rumours, police were forced to publicly deny that arrests had been made in the case. They did admit that over the period of a few days, four people had been questioned in connection with the murder of Hugh Watson. However, no charges were made against any of the individuals. Over the next few years, there was sporadic news about the case. On the fourth anniversary of Hugh's murder, DCS Eric Evans said he was convinced that someone in Llanrhys had information that would lead to the killer. In 1981, BBC Welsh language station Radio Cymru aired a programme about the case, in which the then head of North Wales CID, DCS Gwyn Owen, spoke about the unsolved murder, and three friends of Hugh shared memories of him. 5 years later, DCS Owen spoke to the North Wales Weekly News and reiterated that the file was not closed. He also divulged that early in the investigation, there had been a theory that Hugh had been killed by a passing stranger. DCS Owen felt that the truth lay nearer to home, and that the answers to the mystery were hidden in Llanrhys. About 10 years ago, I went on holiday to Llanrhys. It's in a beautiful part of the world, on the east side of the Eryri, formerly Snowdonia, National Park. I had no knowledge of this murder at the time, and it is unsettling to think that such a picturesque place could be holding on to such dark secrets. When reading about this case, the cruelty and ruthlessness displayed in the murder remains as shocking now as it must have done in December 1975. It certainly seems like the killer or killers were well versed in violence. The length of time it took to torture a defenceless older man before setting him alight while still alive displays an extremely hard heart, seemingly devoid of conscience. What is terrifying is there's a chance those responsible are still alive and living in or near Llanrist. The group of young people seen in the British Legion pub, the two men on the train, and the men seen running across Station Road have to this day never been identified.